Thanks, everyone. We might start. So we're very lucky today to have Giselle Lang. Just to give you a little bit of background, she's commenced managing the study of physical and psychological outcomes following a road traffic crash within Conrad at the University of Queensland in August 2013. Prior to this, Giselle's position was within the acute trauma care program of Conrad, where she was involved in undertaking and collaborating in research related to trauma management, with a specific focus on the management and outcome of those injured in road traffic crashes. Giselle was previously employed as a research officer at the Queensland Trauma Registry for 8 years and assisted in the management of the QTR for 2 of those years. Giselle has a Bachelor of Science honours in the field of psychology and a Master of Biostatistics. And I was asking her before this, and this is her first injury schemes seminar conference. She's used to more academics, so it'll be interesting to... It's always great when we all meet and share our skill sets. We're expecting Giselle to speak for around 30 minutes, leaving 10 minutes for questions. So with that, I'd like you to welcome her, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thanks.
Great. Well, thanks very much for that, Elaine. That's great. So today I'm here to talk to you about the UQ support study. It's a study that's been following up claimants in Queensland for 2 years. So it's a longitudinal study, which I think, I wasn't here yesterday, but from what I'm hearing so far today is maybe one of the gaps that people have started to see. That'd be great to have some more data looking at long-term outcomes of injured claimants. So hopefully today I'll present some data that can kind of start to fill in some of those gaps. So that's just a quick snapshot of our research team at the University of Queensland. The funding for this study has come from the Motor Accident Insurance Commission here in Queensland, and I'd specifically like to acknowledge the policy and research team at MACE for all their support and guidance throughout the duration of this study. So this study has been really been going for quite a few years, about 4 or 5 years, and we're just coming to the end of it now. So just in terms of some background to why we undertook this study. So road traffic crashes have a large impact in our society, and worldwide up to 50 million people suffer a non-fatal injury from a road traffic crash. This can lead to long-term disability in many individuals. The annual total cost of road traffic crashes in Queensland has estimated to be $3.6 billion. The number of road traffic crash fatalities, we've seen a decline in Queensland over recent years, and this perhaps is leading to more survivors of road traffic crashes. And I guess importantly, there are psychological disorders that we are seeing in this survivors from road traffic crashes who are injured. The most common of these disorders are post-traumatic stress disorder, so PTSD, depression, generalised anxiety disorder, and driving phobias and other anxiety disorders. So in terms of the aims of this particular study, we aim to describe the physical and mental health in a sample of CTP claimants who have been injured in a road traffic crash in Queensland and who had sustained predominantly minor injury. So this is one of the benefits of this study. There has been other research done in cohorts that have more serious injuries, but we have looked at those with predominantly minor physical injuries. We also wanted to evaluate the impact of physical and mental health on recovery, so recovery in terms of the level of disability and return to work outcomes. We want to know, are there factors which may be helpful to facilitate early identification of claimants that may have poor recovery? So just some quick methodology now of the study. So the study was undertaken in Queensland, and up here we have a common law fault-based CTP scheme. So the injured party must be able to establish negligence against an owner or a driver of a motor vehicle, and MACE regulates the CTP scheme here in Queensland. To be eligible for inclusion into this study, you had to meet the criteria listed there. So this criteria is really trying to get at that predominantly minor physically injured cohort, given the AIS cutoff there of having an injury severity for a single injury between 1 and 3. So no claimants with severe or critical injuries are included in this sample. In terms of recruiting people into the study, letters were sent from MACE to invite participation into the study. So a search of the database at MACE was undertaken, and possible potential claimants were sent a letter to invite participation. Once written consent was obtained, we sent out the first survey. So approximately 1 month after that survey, the claimants undertook an interview. So as part of the, you know, consenting to participate, they were informed that they would be undertaking both a survey and an interview, and this occurred at three different time points throughout the study. So the first wave, we call it, of measurements or assessments was done at six months post-RTC. Wave two was at 12 months. And the last assessments of these people were done at 24 months post-RTC. The surveys took approximately 20 to 30 minutes to complete, and interviews lasted anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on the level of participants' symptoms. And this was mainly psychological symptomology. The staff conducting the phone interviews were highly trained. There's a section within the University of Queensland that particularly deals with this type of computer-assisted telephone interviewing, and they were independent from the research team. So the interviews were done independently of us at Conrad, and at all times the claimant's details remained confidential, and this was an important part of the process as well. I won't go through this really in detail, so it'll be on the slides that you can access, but these are some of the measures that we used in the survey. So we assessed pain in the claimants. We used the SF36 to assess physical and mental health-related quality of life. Those were two of our main outcome measures. Looked at social support and return to work. And in the interview, the participants were asked to rate their perceived threat to life, how likely they thought they were going to die in the accident. We also used the HUDAS to assess the disability of participants. So this is a self-reported disability, and it's one of the main outcomes of this study. And then the psychological disorders were assessed using two measures there. And it was a structured interview that was undertaken, and therefore we used the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders, so DSM-4, to classify whether someone had a mental disorder or not. And for this population, we were interested in five disorders, and that was PTSD, major depressive episodes, depression, anxiety, and agoraphobia and panic attacks. So the interview was structured to try and get at those five disorders specifically. Throughout the presentation, I'll probably refer to a disorder as a DSM-4 diagnosis, so you'll know what I'm talking about there. So as I said, participants were recruited from the MACE database, and a search was done between April 2009 and September 2010. The at-fault vehicle needed to be registered with CTP insurance in Queensland to be obviously eligible for this study. So just a caveat, so this sample doesn't include all types of road traffic crash injured people. So at-fault drivers are not included in this sample, given they're not compensable in Queensland. And those entitled to claim who obviously didn't make a claim are also not included. So just a brief overview of the participants that are included in this study. Overall, 382 consented to participate in the study. MACE actually sent out letters of invitation to over 3,000 claimants on the database, so the uptake of participation was fairly low. 372 participants completed assessments at least one wave, so we only had 10% ten participants drop out in that initial phase. However, we really did have good retention over the 2 year study period. We saw that at 2 years, 88% of the 372 participants completed the interview, and 69 completed the survey. So that's really, really quite good retention rates for a follow-up study of this length. Quickly, cohort characteristics. We've got the mean age, 48, 63% females. So two-thirds of people had an injury severity score, 1 to 3, so again, minor physical injuries. 70% had more than 12 years education, so we've got a highly educated group. 57% currently married. In terms of road user type, most were drivers. However, we did have 20% of people that I would term vulnerable road users, so cyclists and pedestrians that were injured. Okay, size of the issues that we found in this cohort. So in terms of mental health history, approximately 50% of the sample who had reported no history of mental illness pre-RTC had a subsequent mental health diagnosis according to the DSM-4. And just to reiterate there, that's just the five disorders: the PTSD, depression, anxiety, agoraphobia, and panic attack. And if we just have a look more closely at the participants who had at least one of those DSM-4 diagnoses, and we just look at wave one for an example, we see that overall 56%, so 196 people had a DSM-4 diagnosis at wave one, and 172 of these had PTSD, depression, or anxiety. So those three disorders are the top main diagnosis in this group, and making up nearly 90% of the disorders. And that's just a quick kind of diagram to show how interrelated those three disorders can be. It's not just as simple as having one or the other. And the middle triangle there, 10% of people had all three. So it just really goes to show how complex the psych morbidity really is. So now we have a look at how mental and physical health relate, and this is just a brief for now, and I'll go into a bit more detail later. We can see that those who have a psych diagnosis, so in the bold numbers there, have significantly higher disability, significantly lower physical health and physical quality of life, and higher pain compared to those who don't have a DSM-4 diagnosis. And this can really be seen at each wave. And if we look at those numbers, the bolder numbers within each row, so looking over time, there's actually not much change occurring in disability, levels of disability over time, levels of physical quality of life. We do see a decrease in pain levels between wave one and two, but then not much change after that. However, on the flip side, for those that don't have a mental health diagnosis, a mental disorder, you can see that there is some as improvements. We've got less disability happening over time, higher quality of life, physical health-related quality of life, and pain is decreasing. So overall, this really demonstrates the impact that mental health or mental illness is having on physical health. Okay, so just having a look at some of the other issues we found in this group, we can see that nearly 40% of people in this group had long-term sick leave, so that was more than 30 days. And now I just wanted to petition out those who did and didn't have a psych diagnosis and look at work absenteeism. And we can see that half of the participants that had a psych diagnosis had long-term sick leave, but for those that didn't have a diagnosis, over 40% had no time off work. So it's quite obvious from this slide the impact that psychological disorders is having on absenteeism from work. And just quickly, in terms of health service utilisation, participants who had a psych diagnosis had significantly more road traffic crash-related healthcare visits in the first 12 months compared to those who didn't have a psych morbidity. And they also had significantly more visits in the second year as well, the 12 to 24-month period. At this stage, we don't have information on the type of health service that was being utilised, but this is something that we're hoping to work on in the future. And just quickly, also ask the claimants about their expectations regarding recovery. From this graph, we can see that that in terms of the participants, whether they expected to recover, those who had little expectation or no expectation at all to recover, that proportion seemed to increase with time. So they're the two darker squares down the bottom of the graph. So as time went on, that proportion had little or no expectation to recover seemed to increase. And when we asked them, did they expect to return to doing what they did before, again, as time went on, that proportion had little or no expectation to do that increased. Okay, so just onto what we found were indicators of recovery. To look at this, we used trajectory analysis to basically classify participants into probabilistic groups that displayed similar recovery trajectories over time. So this is the one for disability. So what really comes out from this graph is that the level that, I don't know how to point this, but the level of disability that you tend to report at 6 months is what you report at 2 years. We really don't see much recovery happening over time in terms of disability. You know, nearly two-thirds of participants have low disability. That's the red line there. Yet they're still higher, still reporting levels of disability that are more than the Australian average, Australian norm, which is the purple line down the bottom. Nearly a third of participants reported quite high disability. That's the blue line, chronic, didn't change over the 2 years. And then we have that small minority that report this kind of severe disability over time. When we have a look at if you also had PTSD, you can see how the trajectory shifts upwards to indicate higher disability. So in all groups, if you also had PTSD, you're reporting significantly more disability. And just to kind of round it out, the dotted lines below are those trajectories for those who didn't have PTSD. So they're reporting lower levels of disability. We also had a look at what we found predicted disability, like overall, and we used multi-level modelling for this to account for the longitudinal nature of the data. So the following were found to predict higher disability. So things like lower expectation to return to work and to recover, higher pain predicted higher disability, a higher perception of threat to life, and a higher age also predicted higher disability, but this was very, very apparent in those with PTSD. And of course, also we have the mental disorders over on the side too, also predictive of disability. So again, getting to the kind of, you know, the association between the physical and mental health. So in quick summary for disability, we saw that claimants report disability levels above the Australian average. They didn't seem to change much over the 2 years, 2 year study period, so very little recovery seen. High disability levels are reported for those with lower expectations to recover, increased pain, and those who have psych diagnoses. Okay, so then we looked at the physical health-related quality of life, and these are the recovery trajectories here. So over a quarter of participants were predicted to be in the top trajectory, the black line there, and they seemed to be pretty much unaffected by the road traffic crash. They reported levels of quality of life near the Australian average. I'm concerned, though, the other two groups. Again, like disability, we're seeing that levels of physical health related quality of life reported at 6 months at the first time wave time point don't seem to change over time. There's little improvement occurring. And again, if we look at those who had PTSD, so this time the scale is the lower, you know, lower you are on the scale, the lower physical related, health related quality of life you have. So if you have PTSD, you're reporting lower levels of quality of life. And again, the dotted line above the average trajectory showing if you don't have PTSD, what you're reporting your physical health related quality of life to be. So again, looking at predictors of physical health-related quality of life, similar things to disability. I mean, they're both physical health measures. Again, we're seeing the lower expectations to return to work and to doing what you did, expectations to recover. If you have lower expectations, you're likely to have lower physical health-related quality of life, increased pain, increased perceived threat to life, and increased age, all related to having a lower physical health related quality of life and having that PTSD diagnosis present as well. So just in summary, again seeing that claimants show levels of physical health related quality of life below the Australian average, a vast majority of them do. 27% showed gradual recovery towards the Australian average, that was that top line. 55% showed gradual recovery also, but at quite significantly lower levels, and 18% really showed no recovery and at very low levels of physical health related quality of life. So that was that the bottom line I showed previously. This is where it gets more interesting when we looked at the mental health related quality of life for these claimants. You can see there's that group at the top, the green line, that are unaffected following the accident, so they're, you know, they're reporting mental health related quality of life above the Australian norm, so we'd call them unaffected or resilient. But when we added, we had a look at how PTSD affects your trajectory, you're significantly worse in terms of your mental health related quality of life, which is probably not surprising. But the gap there between the average trajectory and what you look like if you have PTSD, it's actually quite large, so it's one standard deviation lower for the group in blue and the group in black there. And this one is just hard to see, but again, just rounding out, if you didn't have PTSD, it's the dotted lines above the average trajectory. So I kind of what we did is we had a bit more look at who made up the blue trajectory, like what caused them to decline like that over time. So what we found was that those in that blue trajectory, the ones that were deteriorating over time in terms of mental health related quality of life, were likely to have a history of mental illness, more likely than the unaffected participants. At 6 months, so right at the beginning, those in that blue trajectory were also more likely to have a psych diagnosis present. They were more likely to report lower social support, lower recovery expectations, and have higher disability. We didn't find any significant differences, though, between those who had a deteriorating trajectory and those that showed improvement, the red trajectory at 6 or 12 months. So we really wanted to look at the red and the blue and go, what caused... You know, what makes someone be in one recovery trajectory or the other, but we didn't find any statistically significant differences. We wanted to find that reason for the divergence at 12 months, but it's really unclear, so we really need further research on that. I think that'd be very important. Just recapping, we really found that the lower expectations, the lower social support, an increased pain predicted lower mental health related quality of life. The pain was particularly relevant if you had PTSD, and again the presence of two disorders obviously affects your mental health related quality of life more than if you just had one. So that's kind of saying the same thing, that we found the majority of claimants had levels of mental health related quality of life below the average for the Australian population. 19% were unaffected, so that's good, I guess. But down the bottom, 17% had this deteriorating trajectory over time, and that the presence of PTSD significantly exacerbated this decline or much worse. So just quickly looking at return to work, which was the last outcome we looked at. Overall, 78% of those who had worked before the accident had returned to work in some capacity by 2 years. And what we did was we did get the probability of returning to work if you're in one of these recovery trajectories. So for disability, you can see that the probability of returning to work is lower for those with reporting high disability. But, you know, so it can range from 86% probability of returning to work if you're in that the red trajectory, 25% if you're reporting severe disability. In terms of physical health related quality of life and your probability of returning to work, again, you can see that, you know, worse physical health related quality of life, lower probability of returning to work. And this is, again, interesting where when we did the same analysis for the mental health related quality of life, there's actually not much difference in your, you know, your likelihood of returning to work over those four trajectories. So just to kind of wrap it all up, I just wanted to go through some what I feel are strengths and challenges that we face during this study. Firstly, the strengths. So, you know, the longitudinal study design of this study really is a strength. I mean, without it, you wouldn't be able to see those recovery trajectories at all. You know, it just gives you more power and accuracy compared to cross-sectional study designs. We had that high retention rate of participants over the course of the study, which is excellent because it can really be an issue for longitudinal research. And again, it's one of the really few studies looking at predominantly minor injury. And I guess I should have reiterated again that when you're looking at those results, we are talking about minor physical injuries. These people are not severely physically injured. In terms of the challenges, we did have that low participation rate. You know, only about 10% of the people approached took up the study, so that may affect the generalizability of the findings. It's hard to recruit this minor injury cohort. You know, it is much easier face-to-face with maybe the more severely injured that you approach in hospital to participate in research. So that was a challenge. The sample does not represent the entire road traffic crash cohort, as I said before, so it may not be representative, particularly to the other states that have no-fault schemes. There is a chance of selection bias too in this study, just given that opt-in consenting process. So in conclusion, what did we find? We found that claimants report disability levels above the average for the Australian population. Disability remained relatively stable over the 2 years post-injury, and there was low probability of returning to work with those with severe disability. The majority of claimants experienced levels of physical health-related quality of life below the Australian average, and 27% were predicted to show average levels of physical health-related quality of life, which is good. And the majority of claimants experienced levels of mental health-related quality of life below the Australian average, and we saw that there was those 17% that were predicted to decline over time, so they're quite concerning. So overall, really, I think the take-home message is that the presence of a mental illness predicts poorer physical health. So mental health and physical health are very, interrelated and need to be kind of looked at as looked at together. I don't think it's hard to tease them apart. You can't. One thing to note, though, is the proportion of claimants with mental illness in this sample is a reflection of what we're kind of seeing, the current reality in the community. Mental illness and people living in the community with it is quite high. So it's just not in this cohort. So overall, you know, the hope is that the outcomes from this study can provide some important indicators and recommendations that can be used to influence policy and practice in injury management and post-injury rehabilitation. I think, you know, really it was good just to have this longitudinal cohort followed up for 2 years. I guess, from what I'm hearing, first time at this conference, it's not routinely done. Mace had the foresight a few years ago to invest in this study. It's coming to the end now, and I think we're getting some really valuable, insights and data from this study that we can take into the future and move forward on. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks. If I could open the floor up to questions, if you could use the mic in the middle of the room, and just to remind you, it is being recorded.
Adrian Gould, Taylor Fry. I just had a question about the selection of lower injury severities, the AIS, no more than three. Mm. My recollection was that the AIS itself tends to change over time, sometimes downwards, but predominantly upwards. I just wondered if that had any effect on the sample size, and did you have to sort of cull people out because when you looked at the AIS again, it was no longer in the sample?
Yeah, and I think at the beginning, so because the sample was recruited between 2009 and 2010, you're right, I think at MACE the AIS 90 may have been used at that time, but the final analysis, so looking at the injury severity of the total cohort, is based on AIS 2005 now. So there may have been... you're right. Right at the beginning, when we did the extract from the database, the AIS system now has changed, has been upgraded to the 2005. And when we use that to look at the whole cohort, that's where we get that 64% had an ISS between 1 and 3. So it's using the new system. And we did have, that's why we say it's predominantly minor, because whether it was the change in the system or it's just that, some of them did have these AIS injuries of 3, we do have people with ISSs of 9 and like a couple with 16, so, 17. Yeah. So I don't think it made a big difference, the change in AIS version, but yeah.
What do you think you'll actually do with the data? What changes do you think we'll see in injury management or fault schemes or no-fault schemes for CTP in Queensland?
You mean over the study period?
After the study period. What do you think will change?
Oh, what do you think will change? I think I'll have to... Our job as researchers to gather the data and make it available for those who can make those decisions. And I think that's the next step is, this is, it's been a long study. It's coming to the end now in terms of we're going to release the final report of these, of the results, and we'll release that back to MACE, and then there'll be a conversation about where to go to from there, so how to use it to, influence change and things like that. So, that's the next challenge, that the hard part of collecting the data, analysing the data, cleaning the data, all that's been done now. And that was a challenge, but now the next challenge will be. So I'm not sure, but watch this space, I hope.
Hi, Warwick Gardner, Ernst & Young. I just wondered if you had a look at the impact, what difference the impact of their experience with the scheme might have made to the outcomes and the recoveries. Like, did you look at when did they get a settlement, or when, what was their experience of their interaction with the scheme?
Mm-hmm. So, what I present here is the kind of the main findings. The study data set is larger, and I think one of the we did try to assess the claim finalisation, when that occurred. We asked that at the third time point, so at the second year. It was a bit difficult to get at that because you had to rely on people telling you if it had happened or when it was, a few months ago. It wasn't very accurate. So I know the next step from this this study is to go back and now talk to Mace about maybe looking at some data linkages or trying to get at the data that Mace holds that's more rich and accurate and marry it up with what we're finding in the study. So that's another watch this space, because I think you're right, like, you know, those type of claim process variables could have an impact on this for sure. So that's our next step. Yep.
Hi, it's Peter from Comcare. Just to add to that, some work that we've been doing in a very similar vein, but different, we actually were able to link our own data, which was nice. So good luck with that.
Yeah.
What we actually found was that the experience of being in the scheme, when looking at like from a whole different range of things, including whether or not I felt I was treated fairly, whether or not I got support from my employer, all those types of things, we were looking at resilience, which is very, very similar results to what you're finding in, with mental health issues. What we found was that had no impact on the outcomes of our claimants. So if somebody had low levels of resilience, regardless of whether they had a good experience with the scheme or a poor experience with the scheme on that broad level, it had no impact on the length of time that they were off work or the cost of their claim.
With that, I think we'll finish up. If everybody could just say thanks to Giselle. It's been very interesting.